Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and I'm here with my co-host, Austin Chadwick, and our guest, Zach Wallace. And we want Zach today to talk about his experiences with experimentation with different types of mobs and mobbing styles. So first, Zach, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you interested in mobbing, maybe your history with mobbing in general, and then everything, we can move on to the experimentation piece after that.
Yeah, for sure. So I graduated, I want to say recently, but I guess 5 years ago is not as recent. and so from UNC Chapel Hill with a bachelor's of science in computer science. So definitely studied it and then went straight into the field. And then now I'm actually getting a master's of management. So it's, I try to find a balance between, you know, both the very technical side. I want everything to be absolutely perfect from a technical perspective, but then also from a business perspective, you know, we got to get things done. And so it's an interesting blend, and that's sort of how I ended up in mob programming. So last year I joined a new company, and this company went from 2 developers to 7 developers within 10 months. So we saw rapid growth in our development team, which brings a lot of baggage with it, right? It's always good to have more manpower, but how do you build trust, right, within the team? And I really love the way that you all have spoken about that in some of your YouTube videos and stuff with, like, you know, building trust, establishing those just very positive relationships. And so one of our team members actually had a really good experience with mob programming, and he wanted to bring it into our culture to try it out. And so we have a weekly retro to basically go over and say, hey, what can we do to be better? And that's sort of how we wound up on mob programming. And we've been through many different trials, so we can get into the experimenting, you know, in a little bit. But that's, for the most part, I think that's how we wound up where we are. As for my experience, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but as for my experience, that's it. So for the past, like, 3 months, that's all I've done with mob programming.
Right on. Very cool. Well, thanks for sharing a little bit about yourself. And that can kind of lead us into the first topic. How Agile led you to experiment. So, how did Agile inspire you to have this kind of experimentation mindset?
Yeah, so one of the coolest things I think that Agile brings to the table is, hey, nobody's perfect, right? We need to analyze ourselves and say, hey, like, what can we be doing better at any given time? Now, granted, you have to let experiments play out, right? But at the same time, you do want to think about how you can move forward. How can you be better every day? And so during our retros, typically is where this is brought up. And one of the things we're having problems with is, and I'm sure you've ran into this in the past, is, hey, my PR has been out for like 2 days and nobody's even looked at it. Or, hey, like the communication between person A and person B isn't there. So we actually have the same thing done in 3 different places. And actually what the biggest piece was, and what I find to be the biggest benefit of mob programming, was the transfer of domain knowledge. So if you think about, like, you know, we went from 2 to 7 developers. Well, these 2 developers legitimately built everything themselves. So they have a vast knowledge of everything in the system. And don't get me wrong, they're like 2 of the most intelligent people. So obviously, like, we have to go and talk to them when we need help, right? But then also we need to be able to know what to do as a development team. And so we ran into the problem, well, you know, we're going and asking our 2 colleagues every day, like, hey, like, where is this? Where we really need to be saying, you know, like, hey, how can we find it for ourselves? So that's basically how Agile came through. You know, you're very reflective, analytical, and you respond to what you've seen.
Right on. Very cool. And so it led you to experiment with mobbing, and it also led you to experiment with different types of mobbing. So I'm looking through your blog article here. We'll be putting it in the show notes, and the title of the blog was Mob Programming, an Organizational Tool. And so thanks for the shout out to us in the blog post. So much appreciated there. and to some other great resources by Jay Bazuzzi and Tim Ottinger. And so, you know, you listed off some great qualities of mob programming that you know, many have talked about before, transfer of knowledge, code quality, team chemistry, discussing large architectural decisions. And I think we were talking about it a little bit earlier, so maybe before we get into the cons of or potential not great things that can happen in mobbing that you highlighted, but you were talking about different mobbing patterns. So how did you guys, you said you are in some sort of rotation or something. Do you want to get a little bit into that?
Yeah. So let me preface this by saying I was probably the one person who was most against this at first. And so like when it was brought up to the team, as you know, many people have said, well, how can you be as efficient as that as you were in a full independent working team, you know? And so what happened initially is there were some folks that saw that as well. And so we just tried experiment. Right. So we say, okay, out of our team of seven, let's put four people in a mob, let them try it out, and then come back to us. Right. And so we saw how that went. We actually had some really cool results. And in the blog article, you also see, you know, where we kind of defined our experiment as well. So we focused on larger projects for more domain transfer, or domain knowledge transfer, excuse me. But then, so what we got into is like, hey, so some of the things that we see is that we actually really enjoy this, you know, working together, working as a collective, getting things done, and reducing overhead in various ways, right? But then also, it wears you out. So what we were noticing is going from completely independent work to now full-time mobbing, it drains you, especially it depends on, you know, on your personality as well. For some of the people who maybe aren't as willing to, or not willing, but aren't as, I guess, inherently apt to talk all the time, you know, they're more of the introverted type. It can be hard to come out and basically put a voice to your opinion without trying it out and testing it first as you would as you're independently working. So we saw that, you know, it does tire and wear you out sometimes. So we're like, okay, so now we have seven people, everyone wants to try it, let's start rotating people. And so we had the one person who brought the idea to the mob, and he's kind of, you know, he was the leader of the rotating group, and we would see people filter in and out. And so he basically coached us into how to do this. And so it gave us time to rest ourselves in this rotating mob, but then it also gave us time to go knee deep in something with our teammates. So that's kind of how we came to the end goal there, or the end result.
So in that rotation, are you like, how frequently did somebody join the mob and leave the mob?
Yeah, so it's typically, I say this with an asterisk, right? Because everything depends. typically it's maybe about a sprint, right? So we run on 2-week sprints. I know I said we have retros every week, but that's to help further communicate, especially in our trying times right now. And so we do 2-week sprints where we basically say, okay, well, we're going to have four people. Here are the four people. They're all going to work in the mob. And then after the sprint's over, it let us know if you're tired, if you want to rotate out, whatever you want. Oh, cool. And if not, yeah, all that.
Nice.
Yeah. So a little bit of optional, like you have an option to be in the mob or not. I know it kind of reminds me of an example of something that we've seen in our organization before, where there was a pair and a mob, and then they were exchanging members often. And so they were pairing and mobbing kind of at the same time on two different projects, but they would rotate people out on both projects. And that was a pretty interesting experiment. Did you see the level of maybe understanding go up when somebody spent a sprint in the mob and then they went off to work on their own? Were they more effective after they had been in the mob?
So let me preface this by saying we didn't objectively measure this,
okay,
but yeah, objectively, yes, we saw a drastic improvement. Some of the newer members, so like throughout the 10 months, right, we had, you know, it varied when people would come in. So some of the people that came in as, you know, as late as November, they're able to just hit the ground running now with like almost any challenge that we face. And this varies from junior to senior level, which we don't differentiate, but it just in terms of experience, right? And so it's really interesting to see how much it's helped transfer the domain knowledge. It's very noticeable.
Cool, right on. Yeah, and to transition topics a little bit, so one thing I really liked about your blog article and what you just shared with us right now is you shared what went well and also what didn't go well, right? And so I think that's great. It reminds me of, I don't remember the person's name who did an open space, who mobbed with us, not me personally, but he did like the dark side of mobbing or something like that. Did you see this one, Chris? Or
I don't think I did. Remember the name of the title, but I don't know if I
did. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's great to talk about things that are more of a challenge or more of a concern with mobbing and air them out. So you brought up some of these, and I thought it'd be fun to talk about. So for one, thanks for bringing it up. And so you said you saw something like herd mentality going on in the mobs a little bit. Do you want to describe that a little bit more?
Yeah. So it's definitely something I witnessed, and it does add value to, you know, remind everybody that we are a newly formed team, basically, right? So we had people staggering in. So trust wasn't there. Inherent trust wasn't there. And most of us hadn't done this before. So this was very new for everybody with a new team. And so you had a lot of basically just ideas floating around. And sometimes, I mean, if you look at social psychology, right, you think about how groups of people act differently than individuals of people. And I also saw that a little bit in the mob programming at first. I think it's completely normal. You know, I think it might have been chalked up to growing pains. But I also think it's something to be careful about. So one of the practices that I've really seen in mob programming is that you want to hold yourself accountable, right? So one of the things, one of the tricks is you always have a devil's advocate on the team, right? For better or for worse. We personally haven't used that yet, but I have seen that on there. And I think that that's an interesting way of basically making sure that we don't just follow the catchy thing. And I saw that it could very quickly delve into ideological thinking, where I am more so a pragmatic when it comes to programming. I want to do what's right, but I also want to make sure it's the correct time to do what's right. So it's interesting because you always have those balances, and it's very subjective. So kind of figuring out where that line is can be difficult. Does that answer the question there?
Yeah, I think so. And that's interesting because you kind of said what I was thinking, where you try to take on the devil's advocate role on the mob. I think that was in Michael Keeling and Joe Runn's mob programming patterns. They saw that as a good role to have in a mob. And I know I've done it before. I've even called meetings where I see the team going one direction and I'm like, I'm going to call a meeting and bring in people and be like, I'm going to argue against everybody.
It's very entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I think for that particular one I'm talking about, I was pretending to be the person who doesn't care about security at all, or, you know, and argue with everybody about it. But
I enjoyed that a lot, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad you did. It was harder to tell in the moment. Yeah, I even had a name, like, what was it, Darth Sec or something like that.
Exactly.
And I've also noticed it's been very healthy. I think when I was earlier in experiencing mobbing, it felt nicer to be in a mob with people I agreed with. And obviously things move faster in that way. But especially recently, I've been in mobs where there's quite a bit of disagreement and it feels frustrating at times. But we've been noting in our retrospectives that we do throughout the day that, man, the result turns out much better when we disagree. We both throw on the table what we think is what we should do. And then we end up usually coming up with, I say A, he says B. But usually end up with C, which is a blend of A and B, and, you know, both things combined. And so, so I think you're right. It is a good caution to watch out for the herd mentality in a mob of people just going along with the strongest voice. Yeah. Did you have anything to add to that, Chris? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that it just extrapolates to this. I've kind of come to this idea of like optimization for diversity in the mobs. And so that means hiring diversity, that means skill diversity, that means opinion diversity. And so if you have that diversity, you have more of that constructive conflict. And so it's just really important, I think, to really consider diversity a high skill to have as an organization, and then implementing that. In those situations where we get that really two people really disagree with each other enough to draw out everything and then are willing to try the two different approaches and come out of it on the other side, you end up with, like you said, much better situations. So I agree with that pattern of the devil's advocate, or even hiring so that you have the different viewpoints, different styles, different skills, those types of things.
Cool. Yeah, so I had one follow-up question for you on this topic, Zach, and it was in regards to code review. I think it was something you tweeted about where you were saying, and I'm glad we're having a conversation about it because that's what I wanted when I saw your tweet. I'm like, oh, I want to talk to him about it. So here we go. was you said something about the mob is in their own context, so it's hard for them to see the issue. So they're all in the same mindset, so they don't see that a piece of code was unreadable or something like that. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I'm actually really glad you brought this up. I think it's interesting to think about it, right? Because a mob, in a sense, is one entity that runs through code. It's supposed to reduce overhead. It's supposed to make sure that you get everything through, which is totally good. And it definitely has a ton of benefits. But one of the things that I do see, and this goes hand in hand with herd mentality, is it can be difficult sometimes to come with a completely fresh set of eyes. One of the biggest benefits of pull requests in my head, and from my experiences, is that I'm coming into this with very little context. You know, I may have some story in Jira or, you know, whatever story mapping place you use. And that's all I know. And so I look at the code, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. And then, maybe I'm reading it a different way because of how it's structured, but I see some just difference that is more of an architectural change, right? Or maybe it's a way bigger change than it was originally intended for. And it didn't get filtered up to the whole team, and it was this little change that happened in a siloed group, which is good. It's totally good to have that, but it will also affect the workflows or development style of others. And we see that a lot in terms of massive development changes, simply because we're in the startup phase, right? So we're having to send a group apart and redo 30% of the application at once, and so we try to break that up, but sometimes it's easy to kind of get tunnel vision. And you need that person just come in and say, hey, like, let's open this up. Let's think of new ways and ideas. And that hits on the advocate role, the devil's advocate role, right? But it can be difficult to bifurcate yourself from being in the mob to coming in with a fresh set of eyes.
Nice.
Very cool.
Yeah. I think we see a lot of that in our environment. When we switch people between projects. And so they might be mobbing on one project or another, but in our environment, you can't stay on the same product for more than 2 years within the last 3 years. And what that allows for is it kind of forces like this new opinion, this new idea to kind of be injected in, and then it mixes things up quite a bit as those shifts happen. It's kind of a similar effect, it sounds like, which has been pretty cool.
Yeah, I suspected, Chris, you would solve that problem with switching, mob switching. So I didn't even have to say it.
Yeah. In my head, I've had this exact same thought in my head, and there are some cool ways to handle it. I really like the idea of kind of rotating people out, especially for, you know, and like the education of the team. I know some organizations that all of their training facilities are all mobbed, but then they all go back to individual developments in their normal environments, or they have the option to be mobbed or individual in their environments. And that's sort of a cool pattern for sure.
Yeah, and I think, so the tough part about this is it's, as you said before, there's a lot of subjectivity in many things. And I think it was, I just saw it on Twitter, basically saying that a lot of metrics, even though they feel quantitative, they're all qualitative, subjective, almost all of them in the end. And
yeah.
It's been known that way in the lean community for a long time, but there's this impression that I need quantitative, you know, unbiased data. And that's very hard to come across. But I think I've been thinking ever since your tweet, I've been thinking about it. It definitely hit me. But so I've been running experiments, but it's only subjective, so I can share them. But it's something we did before, but your tweet made me think about it more, is every time we write a piece of code as a mob and say, okay, erase your memory. If we're reading this for the first time, how does it read? You know, how much parsing are we doing, for example, or does it read like English? You know, and so we, at least in the mob and recently, we're asking ourselves that question pretty much for every card. To go through a second time to look through it. And again, that's subjective, right? Pretend you erase your memory, right?
Yeah, recursive knowledge. I think psychologically it doesn't really work that way, but it's a good
Yeah. But, you know, we were trying and then, oh, go ahead, Zach. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no. I just want to say I love that, by the way. I've been like taking notes as well. I just absolutely love that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And the other thing that just happened today, so it was really good timing. Was someone was real passionate about a piece of work, and so they went off and coded it on their own time, essentially on the non-mob time, and then they brought it back in, and I'm like, oh, this is perfect. I'm going to do live code review today, and I'm going to see what it's, you know, what I bring it, as opposed to if I was mobbing with him. And the things I saw felt like the same things I would have said to him if we were mobbing together. But again, that's subjective. So
yeah.
it's
but that's,
yeah, so that's
totally that, possible.
Yeah. And, but I guess it might become a sort of a trade-off, right? And so if you do a PR, you are definitely going to get a fresh set of eyes that doesn't have the context of the mob, right? But then you lose the efficiency of not having the PR if you mob it, right? So I guess, and maybe it's a trade-off. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
I agree that there could be some tunnel vision. And I think that's what Zach's saying, is that, I've definitely seen it before where people come into an environment where it's been mobbed, and the mob teaches everything you need to know about it. And even if you join one person at a time, it's like, oh, yeah, this, you get an explanation and then you move on. I think in our environment, we've seen siloing happening where a mob becomes siloed. That's why we put the shuffling in place in the first place. I don't know. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah. So from my perspective, we've actually, this was something I also brought up to our team. So we make it a stance to make sure, you know, please tell us everything, otherwise we can't be better, right? And so one of the things that we actually implemented and I really loved is that if you have a major architectural change, then you need more eyes on it, right? So to give you an example, and please make fun of me, we are still on AngularJS right now, but we built in an Angular hybrid application so that we have started moving everything over as end of life approaches, right? And so when you do something like that, that has major, that's a major architectural change on the front end. And so those sorts of things cannot be siloed. But, you know, if you're going through a bug fix, if you're adding a functionality to something that's already basically built, like, who cares? Go through with it. You are all valid engineers and very, very smart. I trust you to do what you need to do. And that comes back to that building trust with the team as well. So you may have seen that tweet, and that was when, you know, we were still establishing that baseline of trust. And I think we resolved it by setting those, okay, well, what constitutes a major architectural change, right? What does this and that? And so that's how we started to build ourselves up.
Very cool. Having habits about with mixing things up when things become complacent. In a lot of my talks, I talk a lot about complacency being one of the most dangerous states you can be in, and the mob can become complacent as well. So, like, maybe for everybody out there, one thing you can just ask yourself is, are we being complacent right now? And if you're challenging, you know, complacency, then you would naturally kind of evolve gradually to systems like this, where you basically say, hey, we need another set of eyes. We need more diversity in our opinions. We need to research in different directions so that we come at this with different viewpoints. All of that. I think you make a great point.
Yeah, and all yes and to that, and I'll share a story about what we've done in those kind of scenarios. But for one thing, don't feel bad about the Angular JS to Angular Next or whatever. Me and Chris both have recent experience with that, so you're not alone in that.
Sounds like a very familiar story.
Yeah, we were laughing as you were saying it, because we were like, oh yeah, you're talking like that's never happened to anybody else. But but one thing we've done with the mob I was on recently was we wanted to bring something to the cloud, right? It was a major architectural change. And so we felt good about ourselves, but we were like, you know, and it turned out to be true. We're probably not going to stay in this mob and someone else is going to inherit this. And I think everybody on that mob has left since then. It wasn't that long ago to be on other mobs. And so we're like, we want to involve the department. So we took an idea from, I believe it's Pixar, Brain Trust. I have a link on it I can add to the show notes, but kind of
Creativity
Inc. Yeah. Okay, cool. So Chris kind of mentioned the idea and we're like, oh yeah, let's do that. So we did like a meeting. We're like, hey, here's what we're thinking to do. You know, come tell us how we're wrong basically, or, you know, come assess us. So people came together. We said, here's what we want to do for the architecture. Here's why, here's the principles and what we're thinking. And then we said, okay, give us your feedback. And so we just kind of went around and we had some facilitation tools to receive feedback. And then at the end, we did some sort of voting or Fist of Five stuff to see where people were at. And it was really good because people brought up issues we didn't think of to navigate through when we went through this. But in the end, it felt really good to get a thumbs up from almost everybody in the department who showed up. So that's one example I thought of where, yes, you do want more, even more eyes than a mob on some decisions, right? And so, yeah. So.
Absolutely.
So to transition topics a little bit, the last thing that stood out to me in your post was you were talking about your concerns about mobbing from a business perspective. So you were talking earlier about you wear kind of two hats, right? Yeah. do you want to go a little bit more into that for the audience?
Yeah. One of the things that I really buy into, and this is why I brought it up earlier, is semi-data driven decisions, right? So as you alluded to earlier, and I completely agree, data driven decisions don't always align with what's actually right. Right? Metrics are not always the best. Sometimes you have to add some subjectivity to it. Actually, one of the members of our team added, you know, when we're trying to meter or manage ourselves with these experiments, we need to talk about how the team feels. How are you happy? You know, is this something that you enjoy? And that may sound silly, right? But like, if you enjoy coming to work every day, we know you're giving it your all. And so that leads me into, well, how do you decipher, you know, to upper management if you need to, or how as upper management do you decide, is this worth it, right? Because at the end of the day, you want them to be happy, but you also want them to be happy enough to collect a check at the end of the month or whatever, right? Because at the end of the day, you need to make money if you're in a for-profit. And so the biggest thing for me is that you do, I believe personally, you do see diminishing returns once the transfer of knowledge is no longer as impactful as it was in the beginning. So there are different use cases from my experience in when to bring people on is a great way to use mob programming, right? There is no better place to Mob program than bringing on a completely new face and saying, hey, we want to trust you. Come help us build this thing. And you are at the wheel and you're going to tell us how to do it. Even if you may not have the experience or even if you are way more experienced, it always helps, right? No matter where you're coming from. But as you start to see many more people have the same level of domain knowledge, is it still worth it from a financial perspective, right? Because what's the biggest cost? It's dev time. Is it still worth it to have four of your developers in one space working on one problem that may not need four heads, right? And so that's my concern. And we don't have much data on this quite yet, but we're starting to look into this because we want to know. We want to say, hey, is this worth it? And maybe it is, right? Because all of this is an experiment. But those are the kind of things that if I were to go to a manager who isn't technically apt, I want to say not technically apt, right? But like who doesn't have technical experience as
savvy.
Yes, thank you. That's the right word. Who isn't technically savvy? And I say, hey, like, I want to do this right now. They're going to say, well, why wouldn't we just divide and conquer, right? And so there is an idea of overhead. I've also seen that overhead is neither created nor destroyed. So either you're doing a synchronous development form of mob programming or you're doing asynchronous. And I think the best way, and also this goes to development, is to mix and match. Some things are going to be better done asynchronously, and some things are going to be better done synchronously. So it's on the manager, it's on the team to decipher, is this the right time or is this not? So it can be a tool rather than, you know, a hard stop, yes or no.
Sure. So Austin probably knows where I'm going to go with this. So I'll just ask you, like, what are the types of work that you think shouldn't be mobbed, and what are the types of work that you think should be mobbed?
Yeah. So that's an interesting question because I don't actually, I can't say with certainty. Yeah. Our experiment so far has only been 3 months. So, but from what I've seen, I guess 4 months, it's April.
Time flies.
Yeah. But so what I have seen is that we've only really done mob programming in larger projects. That way we could have a lot of different heads come together. So that's still a hypothesis that hasn't been fully tested.
So maybe I can give you a thought that might anchor you a little bit. So my opinion is that I've seen this before where I've been part of a mob before that basically said it's not worth mobbing this work, and we split up. And the reason was because we weren't allowed to change the architecture or the implementation. So the agreement of the mob was that we could automate the building, we could automate the work if we were able to change the architecture. We could change the level of abstraction. And so because we weren't allowed to change it, we split up out of the mob. When we were able to change that architecture, we were able to mob together again. And so my personal opinion and what I've seen kind of from the evidence of my history, and maybe I'd love to hear about your experiments with this in the future, but my personal opinion and what I believe I've seen from anecdotal evidence is that if you as a mob believe that you should split up, it might be that the work has become too simple. And if the work is too simple, then could it be automated? And so my proposal to you is that if you find yourself in a position that you feel like the mob should split up, consider whether or not the mob should be building a domain-specific language that would do the work for you rather than having developers write the code themselves, especially like if you're talking about Angular components, right? It's like, oh, we need to do it for this area, we need a field here, we need a field there. You might have a domain-specific language that could write all that code for you as a generator or as a domain abstraction to the code. And so you might want to mob it, and you might get a lot more done as a mob. What I find is that we typically, as a mob, we automate much more of the tedious work that would have been otherwise done by a single developer. and we ended up getting a lot more done. But again, run your own experiments and get back to me on that, because I'm really interested in the results that you get out of it all.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I like I said, I'm taking notes, so I'm writing that down.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and I think I'll just yes and to that a little bit was I've seen that original mob and some of the code that was, and what we noticed seeing that was there were a lot of things that were the same, basically pulling data out of a website and presenting it to people. And we could tell right away on working in the code bases that, hey, they made a generator that remade.
That wrote all of the code.
Yeah, yeah. And so it was like, I need to spin up this website for this domain. And boom, it was spun up and running. And so so I think you guys were able to, you went from deploying one project and then mobbing, it was like 10 projects or something like that. Yeah.
So when I joined our organization, the typical release cycle was a minimum of 6 months to a year and a half or more, typically a year and a half per release. And then we started getting new projects. And after we started mobbing, we got that time down to a 3 month release and then a 2 week release. And then, and we were able to release, essentially new features at least twice a day as a single mob to production. But what was interesting is that when we got new projects that were similar, we had this generator that had a domain specific language that wrote most of the website for us. And so we had a project that basically was going to be, in the old model, would have been years worth of work, completed in about half of the day. And it was all because we just had this domain language that would create the database, it would create all of the APIs, it would create all of the HTML. And we used that, and we eliminated 4 or 5 projects that way before we started working on stuff that was more in-depth, more interesting. And so we mobbed on making that generator great, and then rather than working individually for years on these smaller projects that ended up being done nearly instantly.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's a good story. And it, you know, like for the first 4 years of mobbing, when I was just on mob, we experienced a lot of wins like that. That came out of nowhere. We're like, wow, that was surprisingly easy as a mob.
Yeah. And I think I remember hearing the story of someone who came to you guys like, hey, you know, I have a website that needs to do this. And then you guys deployed it to production later the afternoon, and that person was just completely blown away.
That was after the DSL was like mostly kind of created. And so they gave us some like business, language that we needed to have in there. And we essentially, we used T4 templating. And so what we did is we used this is back then, we don't really use this tool anymore, but we could create the database schema and it would write the website and all the CRUD operations, as well as domain specific calculations into the CRUD operations for us based on this DSL that we basically used the database schema as. And it rocked, it was really cool. And we accomplished a lot that way and forgot about that work because we never had to come back to it. It even wrote unit tests around the work that it generated.
It did.
Wow. You might have to teach me your ways.
Yeah. That's a big thing that I really like to promote is just in those thoughts, like think, how much of the work that we're doing today can be automated now. And especially if it's repetitive work. So as software engineers, we're paid to automate things. And so, why would we ever do anything over and over again? Like the whole profession to me is constant learning and then automating away the need for remembering those things that you learned.
Nice. Yeah, I think we're coming a little bit close on time, so I'm going to add 2 more notes I had here, and then we'll turn it back to you, Zach, for the last word and anything you want to plug. But kind of from the craftsmanship perspective, it's been an experiment hypothesis that I've been running for a while, a few years now, and basically that clean is fast, and the best way to go fast is to go well. And again, subjective, I've felt that. Anytime I take off the craftsmanship hat and do things how I perceive a business person want me to get it done super fast, I end up going slower if the project's bigger than a toy size problem. And so that's just sharing my experience there, why I feel like right and fast are the same, at least for me, in my experience. And then there's something from this morning. I actually wrote it down as a retro item, as a potential. I keep saying I'm on the show, but I haven't done many pull requests to the pattern libraries. But from a Lean Coffee, I was actually in with you on Chris on Monday with some others. We were talking about some manual part of our weekly process. And so someone was like, why don't you scout it? And we're like, oh, you know, so it just feels like a huge thing to automate. And so instead of sitting down and doing this big automation project, we decided to do to scout it. So every time we were going to do this task manually, the mob will split into two. One part of the mob will do the manual task because it just has to get done today. It can't wait for the automation to happen. And the other part of the mob is automating it. So the one part finished the manual task as we usually do. And then the other part said, okay, I got this part scripted out. It's not ready for prime time, but next time we'll review it and, you know, we'll use it. And then we're just going to chip away at this manual task until it is no longer manual. So that's one way to not go full board. We're going to automate it today, but to pick away at it. So it's kind of using the scout rule where you leave the campsite better than you found it.
And that applies to automation entirely.
Yeah, exactly. So so with that, any last word or anything you'd like to plug before we close out this show?
So I just wanted to say thank you. This has been an absolute blast, and I've really loved how you guys have helped me shape my opinions on mob programming. And you've really helped me learn about it. So thank you. As for, you know, my plug, I am helping start up a business, called TechUcate. That's where we're publishing content. And right now we are just trying to find more content creators. So, I would, if you have opinions, please let me know, and we would love to bring you in and, have a platform for you to share your voice. So thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Okay, so you know, I think as always, everybody out there, if you found this episode useful, or you think it would be useful for somebody else to review, then definitely share the show, and share this episode or other episodes that they might feel are important. And then make sure to like or subscribe. And thanks, Zach, for being on the show with us. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much, Zach. This was a blast. I'm really glad we got to do it.
I had a great time.
To all our viewers, have a good one.
See ya.